Need fast travel inspiration? Travel in 10 highlights a new destination every week in just 10 minutes. Find it now at voyescape.com.
This is a Voyescape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyescape.com.
Welcome to the Travel Tales podcast. The winners are the people with the most stories.
One of the great things about traveling is the people that you meet.
I've slept in bus stations, I've slept on people's floors.
And it's already on fire, and then there's just a gigantic, huge explosion, like out of a Hollywood movie.
It's not right or wrong, it's just different.
We hired like 10 Chinese prostitutes to come be our audience.
We were kidnapped by nuns in Puerto Rico.
Not a good idea to be high when you're packing. You forget a lot of stuff.
I got swine flu.
By the time you've lived through it, it's just a good story.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Travel Tales podcast. I'm your host, Mike Siegel. Thanks for listening. My guest today is Mark Phipps. And before we get to Mark, our website is traveltalespodcast.com. Go there. You'll find photos of our guests. You'll find stories that some of the guests have written. You'll find stories that I've written. You'll find links to their social media. You'll find links to our social media. Our main one is Travel Tales Podcast on Instagram. Go there. And I would appreciate it if you give us a follow, give us a thumbs up, say some nice things. And while you're doing that, saying nice things, go to your streaming service, wherever you get this. Maybe it's Apple Podcasts, maybe it's iHeartRadio or Spotify, wherever you hear us through any of those services, please give us a good rating. Say a few nice things. That's always a cool thing for you to do. Costs you nothing, but it boosts our presence there, and that's cool. You think you'd be a good guest for the show? Maybe you know somebody who would be a good guest for the show. Maybe you want to write me and ask me some travel questions, or maybe you just want to say I'm awesome. You can write me at traveltalespodcast@gmail.com. That's traveltalespodcast@gmail.com. Mark Phipps is a guy that wrote to me. He's living in Koh Phangan, Thailand, an Englishman in his mid-30s who's been an expat for a very long time. At least a dozen years or so, he said. He's been out there. He's lived in Australia, New Zealand. He lived here in Los Angeles for a while during COVID. But for the bulk of the time, he's been in Thailand, which he loves very much, and I don't blame him. I'm a big fan, as you people know. I have not been to Koh Phangan, where he lives, although I have heard good things. But he works for a tour company out there and also started a business of his own. And you can learn all about it at lostinparadisetravel.com. One of the biggest fears I've always had, and a lot of people have traveling around the world, is losing your passport. When I can't find it, I freak the hell out. It may be the most valuable document I own. Not only it's my ticket to freedom around the world, but working on these cruise ships, I need it to work. I'm not getting on a cruise ship without my passport. If you go to traveltalespodcast.com, you'll see a story that I wrote, which was an ode to my passport. Having it changed my life. So, of course, I want to protect it. And you should, too. Don't be loose with your passport when you travel. Losing it is a giant hassle. You got to go to an embassy. It screws up your whole plans. It can absolutely ruin a vacation. Don't lose it. So he created this passport cover with basically a tracker in it, almost like an Apple iTag, and it works with iPhones. So if you misplace it, you lose it, you can track it. So go to lostinparadisetravel.com. You can order it online, and you can hear Mark's story of how he created it, got the business off the ground, along with some other great travel stories, because he has been a lot of places. He recently went to Mongolia on his own to visit a village of reindeer herders. We talk about that. So stick around. He's an interesting guy. I enjoyed talking to him. He was in Kyoto, Japan when we talked, and I'm glad we could make it happen. Here's my conversation with Mark Phipps. Okay, Mark Phipps, you're talking to me from Kyoto, Japan. That's amazing. But you're not based in Kyoto, are you? Do you live in Thailand full time?
That's correct. Yeah, I'm just here for a couple of weeks. I've got about a week and a half left before I go home, which is at the moment Koh Phangan in Thailand. So yeah, a bit more island based over there.
Well, I can tell from your accent, you're from Mississippi.
So, the accent does throw people.
Exactly. So what part of, I'm guessing Australia, what part of Australia are you from?
See, that's where I throw people.
Are you not Kiwi?
No, I'm not. I'm actually English.
What?
Believe it or not. Yeah. I picked up the accent and it just never disappeared. I've spent about 2 years in Australia and 2 years in New Zealand as well.
Okay.
and kind of picked it up there just through living quite closely to Aussies and Kiwis. And I can assure you it's a lot. It's dimmed a lot from what it used to be. I used to sound really, really Australian. But no, I'm from Kent in England.
Oh, lovely. Yeah, I usually get that right. That's why you threw me off for a little bit. And also you threw me in the in the email, you put mate. So it's like, I'm over there, mate. And I was like, oh, okay, it's an Australian guy.
Yeah.
And because, you know, as a white guy, I've been to Thailand a number of times. And depending on where you're at, or especially in Bali, you know, they see a white guy, they just assume you're Australian immediately because there's so many Aussies there.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, it's definitely a bit of a playground for Australians there. But no, born and bred English, man.
Okay. Well, how did you find yourself on the other side of the world? And was this for school or were you just backpacking around? How did you end up there?
Yeah, pretty much. I finished my studies back in the UK when I was 19. So a good long while ago now, and knew I wanted to go and travel. I knew I wanted to go do something a little bit different before I got stuck into some studies. And I still really had no idea like what I wanted to do. So yeah, booked a one-way ticket to Australia, did my year there, and did a lot of farm work and everything you need to do to get the second year visa. And then did go home. I was home for a couple of months and then just realized, hey man, like I'm not done with this travel thing yet. There's a lot more that I want to see. There's a lot more I want to do. So yeah, rather than going to study and go to university, I booked a ticket back, but this time through Southeast Asia. I'd met so many people that had been there in Australia. And I was like, wow, this sounds like a magical place. You know, Thailand, Vietnam, Laos, Malaysia, Indonesia. So yeah, I saved up a little more money and came back on my way to Australia to do my second year visa, but stopped off in Thailand. So that's when I first got my taste of Southeast Asia. And then did some trips around there and then ended up back in Australia for that second year. And, from there, things just got a little bit out of hand and, didn't quite make it back home.
So are you, a full-time resident in, Thailand now? I mean, you have like a resident visa or do you still have to like, are you leaving town right now to do a visa run?
I'm on a business visa there, so it's okay. It is slightly different to like a resident visa, but I am generally based. I do float around quite a bit for work, so it does require me to be in multiple places, so I don't need to be a resident anywhere, but I've got work visas that allow me to come and go from Thailand, which is where I spend the majority of my time. But work does bring me to other places, such as Japan for a couple of weeks at a time. And then Thailand is kind of like the base I go back to. But yeah, for sure, at the moment, it's home and has been for a good couple of years now as well, actually. Yeah.
That's great. And so you mentioned the business. We'll talk about the business right now. Lost in Paradise Travel. This is, I guess, well, describe it to people. I guess it's like a trackable passport holder?
Yes. So through my years and years of traveling and moving around and hopping from place to place and packing a bag every few days, I work, my day job is in the travel industry as well. I actually work for a tour operator. And we run tours for travelers, first-time travelers, and they're constantly moving around. And with that, I've seen through the years almost on a weekly or monthly basis, people that have lost their passport. And it's a real problem. You move around, you lose your passport while you're abroad. It's probably one of the most stressful things that could happen. So it was actually January 1st this year. Some friends of mine were in Budapest. We went out for New Year's Eve, came back to our apartment and found that someone was actually in it and currently robbing us, which was a bit of a shock. They got away with a friend of mine's purse. And that was her passport. We essentially, you know, we recovered a few things, it massively disrupted her trip. She was supposed to be traveling around Europe. And January 1st was spent not, where we would have liked to have been, soaking hungover in the thermal baths, but instead at embassies and rebooking hotels and trying to get emergency passports and trying to figure out what we can do to make this better. And I just, as we were walking around the bleak Budapest streets in the snow, I was like, with the technology we have now, that is, why are we not able to track our most valuable document that often gets left behind, whether it's in a hotel safe or it pulls out of your pocket in a taxi on the way to the airport and it drives off. So yeah, I set out to create a solution to the problem, which is a pretty cool looking passport cover that will not only protect your document, but will allow you to sync it to your iPhone and find out where it is all the time.
Okay. Well, I have, when I first saw the product on, online and I went to your page and everything like that, I got as a gift, like more than once, I've gotten a couple passport covers and depending on what they're made of. And here's maybe you can argue for your product now. There's a reason. I mean, some were very lovely. Some of them were like stitched with my initials. And it was a nice gift, you know, for someone who travels as much as me. They figure, oh, nice. But here's the two problems I had. One, it made it bulkier that it wouldn't fit in my pocket as well. Because going through, you know, when you have to pull it out all the time and it slides out of your pocket, you know, it's just easier sometimes without it. Because of the hard cover, and it added a little bulk to it, so the pocket that it usually fit in didn't usually fit. But also, that like officials, when I would hand it to them, they'd always tell me to take it out of the cover because they didn't want to like bother with it and fumble with it. So,
this is true.
What do you? How do you differentiate that with your product? How do you make it? How do you handle those issues?
For sure. Like I'm the same as you. I don't like bulky things. I'm always walking around without a case on my phone because I don't like it.
Yeah.
I don't like a bulky thing in my pocket. Naturally, it's going to add a little bit of bulk to the passport itself, but I've tried to keep it as slim as I possibly can. And one of the best things about it is the actual style of tracker that we use. There are other options out there to have a passport cover, and you could just grab an Apple Air tag and put it in it, which is quite thick. It's quite a bulky thing to add and adds quite a lot of bulk. The tracker that we use is at the same size as a credit card. So it's a thin credit card shaped tracker inside the wallet that just slips inside it and doesn't add a huge amount of bulk. Still fits in my back pocket and my jeans, no problem. So it's not a huge bit of like material to carry around. And also, yeah, of course, the officials often, depends what sort of mood they're in, but they often just look at you blankly until you take your passport out of the cover, which is fine. So yeah, it's very easy. It's got a elastic strap that you simply ping off, and then you just pull it straight out of the cover. So it's easy to get in, easy to get out, and you're on your way, especially if you travel as much sort of like as I do. I'm using it on a almost daily or a weekly basis to get the passport in and out of the cover there.
Okay, well, that's the other thing when I think about, if somebody really wants to take it, they can take the cover off, really. I mean, or is it hard to a thief to take it off? It seems more effective if people lose it, you know, and you want to know where it is.
Absolutely.
But if somebody wants to steal it, they can steal it, right? I mean, you can't put the tracker in the actual document itself, right? Is that illegal to put something in it?
Yeah, to modify a passport. I mean, this is going into the hopes and dreams of my future for it, but I would love it to be embedded in the passport at some point. And that's what I would like to do we definitely got the technology to be able to do that, but I definitely don't recommend to anyone modifying your passport.
Right.
Like government officials don't like that. So yeah, it is effective mostly for your general loss of passports or leaving it behind. You know, if you leave it in the hotel safe and take a taxi to the airport, you're going to get an alert about 3, 4, 5 minutes later that tells you you've left it behind. So it's really more effective for loss of it. That being said, your general, I think, day-to-day thief isn't really looking too much for passports. I don't think, perhaps they are. But I've tried to keep it as subtle as possible, in that, just looking at the cover, you're not going to know there's a tracker inside it. It doesn't like scream that like this is being tracked by your iPhone. So it is an extra layer of defense, one that you definitely don't have with just a regular passport cover. But for your thief that's going out looking just for passports, maybe they're going to take it out of any cover anyway. But yeah, even with a friend of mine that did have it stolen, the passport was actually recovered two blocks away. So they found it. It was just about 2 weeks too late. So the person that had gone through the purse had actually discarded it. So that's even more frustrating to know that if she would have had the cover on it, then yeah, we would have found it just two blocks away. We would have walked past it 20 times looking for it.
Yeah, I can't believe that you found it. First of all, you found it. And then you found it just, you know, it might have been sitting there for 2 weeks. You know, it could have been sitting in that one spot. I mean, that's crazy. Yeah. And a lot of people probably walked by it.
Yeah, it was on top of a vending machine.
Someone found it,
they contacted. And obviously, by that point, I mean, traveling Europe, she was about four or five countries away. We'd already cancelled the passport, and she'd already got an emergency one. So, incredibly frustrating from those parts. But we really did scour the streets as well looking for it.
I tell you, that is one of the greatest fears of mine. You know, I've been to like 100 countries. And I work a lot on cruise ships now too, and I need it to work. Okay. You know, they're not letting me on the cruise ship without a passport. I mean, you need to get on it. So I could lose a lot. So it's one of maybe my most valuable document that I own. So it's a great fear of mine. And I mean, I do the old thing of I keep a photocopy of it, you know, separate from it.
Yep.
But are there any precautions other than, course, buying your product along with buying your cover? What can people do to protect themselves as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the old fail say sort of having a copy of it is always a good idea. Absolutely. I know a lot of people will either email or WhatsApp a copy of their passport to themselves as well. It's always a good idea so that you've got that kind of hard copy, and it stops you taking out your passport when you need it as well. Advice I always go against. I know there's a lot of places here in Japan, technically is one of them, where you're supposed to carry your passport with you at all times. I've been traveling the world for a good 10-15 years, and not once have I ever got in trouble for not carrying my passport with me. So please don't carry your passport with you on a day-to-day basis. You just don't need it. Use the hotel safe. It's there for a reason. Even in a nice place, you just don't know and running that risk. So keep it generally in a place that you know where it is. I made the mistake of having a specific pocket in my bag where I knew where it was, and I'd be like, 100% I know it's in there. And this is when I was living in Australia on a working holiday visa, so I didn't need it. Probably a good 6 months had gone by before I even checked the pocket. When I did go to need it and I checked the pocket, it wasn't there.
That's the worst feeling ever. Worst feeling ever. The panic.
Yeah. It really is. Yeah, you feel your kind of stomach drop and your heart sinks, and you're like, wow, like now what do I do? So to try and get a new passport in a new country was tricky, because I wasn't planning on going home. I wanted to continue traveling, and there were so many things that I needed to do to get a new passport. I remember being so frustrated. I think they're trying to change the process of it now, but you used to have to get someone to sign a photo of you to say, look, I say that this is this person, and then you can submit it. So it's basically verifying that that's your face going onto the passport, but it had to be done by someone that you've known for more than a year. I was like, well, I've only been in this country for 6 months. I don't know anybody here. So it was impossible for me to find someone to sign it. And the only other people that could do it are people in like a high position. So like a lawyer or a policeman or a doctor. So I was frantically trying to run around Sydney being like, can you please sign this? And I was a broke backpacker, and the only person that agreed to do it was a doctor, but he wanted like $50. I was like, dude, like, please help. I had no other choice. So yeah, I'll always remember that. I did get it done. I did get a replacement passport, but yeah, I ended up overstaying my visa because my visa was running out. It wasn't too much of a problem. They were kindly put me on a bridging visa, but just another way to build the stress up on a long backpacking trip. So just be careful with it. Keep some copies and use the safe would be my advice.
Yeah, I got it right here in my eye line because I need it tomorrow. So you brought it up, and I'm like, wait a minute, I'm staring at it. I don't like to leave it out of my eyesight right there because
that's it. Yeah.
My other big fear is like I'm going to get all the way to the airport and reach for it, and I'm like, oh. And then you forget. You got to go all the way back home, get it, miss your flight, that whole thing. Oh.
That's it, man. Yeah, absolutely. How many times are you constantly checking your pocket?
Oh, all the time.
Checking your bag. Where is it? Every time you sit down for a coffee, you get back up. Wait, where is it there? It's something that I do believe can help with that. You get alerts every time you leave it behind. It'll ping up on your phone. And it's not that you want that to happen all the time. You can set your home address so that there are certain places where it won't constantly ping your phone if you'd like to do that as well. So, yeah, it's got a few functions built in. You can actually share the location of it with a friend if you're traveling with a friend as well. So if you happen to lose your phone and your passport, you can still track your passport with your friend's phone.
Yeah, I've had it drop on the bathroom stall floor when I was using it out of my back pocket. And then I walked out of the toilet going, where is my – oh, no. And then it was on the floor of the – then I had to carry around. I tried to wash it off the best I could. It was horrible.
I can imagine, actually.
So, what you say, I mean, it works through your phone to track it. True. Does that mean you have to work? Did you work with Apple and Android and all these other phone systems? Or do you need a special app for that? Or how does it work?
So at the moment, it only works with an iPhone. I'm looking to build it. We're actually launching officially like in December. So it is available for pre-orders now, but it's a very, very new product. So at the moment, we're only working with Apple on it. It links directly in with Apple Find My iPhone. So you don't need to download any other apps or anything like that. The setup takes about 45 seconds. It's just like connecting to any other Apple product. And it links into the Apple Find My iPhone network. So for anybody that doesn't know, every single iPhone in the world works as like a beacon for other iPhones, to people's AirPods, and for AirTags and smart cards like what I've got. So it will ping off anybody's phone that will move around. So that's how that works. No extra apps, no subscriptions needed. It just connects straight to your iPhone and you're ready to go.
Are there countries that there's no coverage that you, if you would lose it in, or is it pretty much worldwide?
It's pretty much worldwide. I actually just got back from a trip in Mongolia, and I can tell you it was pretty much one of the most remote places I've ever been. I went up to visit the Tsartan people up in the northern part of Mongolia. So I was about 65 kilometers from the border of Russia in pretty much what is Siberia, the Siberian wilderness. And it was working there. So if it works there, it's going to work in most other places in the world, I think. And this is probably as remote as you're going to get.
That's pretty incredible. Well, let's give the website and where people can buy this. And can they only order it online or is it in stores? How do they get it?
Online at the moment, we're shipping worldwide. So it's lostinparadisetravel.com. Visit the website, have a look. I write up some awesome blogs from some of my trips as well. And hopefully I just want to also not just have people have a safe passport. I do want people to have the safety and the security to go out there and take some wild, crazy trips. And hopefully in a very small way, this will give people just a little bit more security to be able to do that. The message that I really want to spread to everyone is travel. It's one of the best things I did in my life. And I've somehow turned it from a hobby or something that I would do, couple of times a year to my full-time job. I would absolutely encourage anybody to get out there and please just go take a trip, go to Australia, go New Zealand, go wherever you want to, go to Mongolia. So I write about a few of the trips on my blog as well on there. Absolutely. Please visit the website, ping me a message, ask some questions. I'm very open to chat about absolutely anything or give any sort of travel advice for anybody of where they want to go.
Great. Well, that's awesome. Good luck with the company and good luck with the product. And I hope it takes off. Are there multiple colors? Can I different
color? Just the one at the moment, just a nice cool icy blue.
Okay.
But I will be looking to expand as well for different designs, different colors. Where I'm working on something at the moment where we'll be able to actually customize products for everybody as well, which I think would be pretty awesome and pretty amazing for everybody.
Cool. Well, now let's get to the fun stuff of why you were in Mongolia. What were you doing up there? Why there? And was this just for fun, or did business bring you up there, or both?
Yeah, Mike, my idea of fun is different to a lot of people, I think. For me, the idea of fun, and that is normally the question I got, is why Mongolia? I happen to be in South Korea for work, for my day job, which is the tour business, that I work for. So flights from South Korea to Mongolia are pretty cheap. So I was like, look, I'm due to take some holiday this year. Let's go to Mongolia and see what those guys are up to. So yeah, I booked a ticket to Ulaanbaatar, booked into a hostel for one night, and I knew that one of the main things that I wanted to do was visit the reindeer herders. So yeah, for those that don't know, the Tsetan people, they're one of the last remaining reindeer herders that exists there. And yeah, there's about 30 different families that live up in this remote region up near the Russian border. So I landed in, I took a 12-hour overnight bus to get to Morom, which is a very, very kind of small town. I met, I stayed at a guest house for actually only about 3 hours in the end. Everything in Mongolia is kind of like on a whim, and like transferring and getting around it is really quite challenging. But I made contact with a lovely lady who ran a guest house up there that helped me book parts of the trip, because trying to find and arrange anything in Mongolia is actually really quite difficult. There's not a lot of information online. Trying to book buses is quite challenging. Even trying to book flights is incredibly old-fashioned in that the airlines will kind of like send you an invoice and then you just do a bank transfer to them to book flights. It's quite backwards.
Wow.
So yeah, there's no Apple Pay or anything like that.
Credit cards weren't taken.
There were places, especially in the capital, you can pay on card. So that was quite surprising to get there and be like, oh, we are set up for credit cards and debit cards and things like that.
Uh-huh.
But definitely a bit more in the smaller towns is more cash. So yeah, I got to Sarah. It's called Sarah's Guest House, and actually, because it was very much off season and there's not a lot of tourism there right now, if ever, I was not staying at Sarah's Guest House. I was just staying at Sarah's house.
Yeah.
She's like, yeah, the guest house is under renovation, so I was literally in her apartment for a few hours, and she said, oh, listen, there's some kids coming around for their English lesson soon. Would you mind teaching English? I was like, sure, why not? So yeah, 10 kids turned up. And it was me, and there was actually two other travelers that were kind of going in the opposite direction to me. So we taught an impromptu English lesson to the kids that had visited her apartment. And then about 3 hours later, yeah, I just had lack of sleep on the overnight bus. And she says, cool, I've got you transfer up to the northern region of where you need to go to meet the reindeer herder. So it was back on a very old school looking kind of Soviet era bus about 8.5-9 hours of pretty serious overland travel.
Was there heat on the bus?
There was heat on the bus, which was thankful. We are still pretty wrapped up because it was snowy everywhere. But the roads are really just dirt tracks, to be honest. They're not paved roads once you get outside the main town. So we were bumping around. There's no seatbelts in there. So it was me and quite a drunk Mongolian guy. I mean, he wasn't drunk when we started, but he was drunk by the time we finished. That was just pounding vodka the whole way there. and yeah, we arrived at about midnight. But incredible views, but just some of the worst roads known to man, which got me to the second small village where I spent one night there, and then from there to go and meet the family that I was going to be going to stay with was about another 1 hour drive in the morning, and then we did a 2 hour reindeer trek to get there. The only real way to get there is on the back of a reindeer, so that's what we did.
Well, I got to tell you, I haven't talked to too many people that have been to Mongolia. I mean, that is a haul. I don't know what is the language situation. How easy was it for you to get around? Was this does Google Translate even have a Mongolian translation? I mean, how did you do there?
So in the city, in Ulaanbaatar, the level of English was pretty good. If you want to go into a coffee shop and order coffee, you're gonna get that. That's fine. I actually did. When I landed into Mongolia, I was actually wearing flip flops. I just travel in flip flops. I think it's more comfortable.
I don't know how you do that. I'll get to that later. Go ahead. Keep going.
Yeah. I live on a small island. It's comfortable for me usually. But yeah, we landed and it was -8 and I was like, oh wow, I need to put some shoes on. But they're all in my checked luggage. So I had about two or three people come up to me and at the airport, and like someone so sweet, she offered me socks. She was like, do you have socks? I'll give them to you. They were so worried about my family. I was very much the talk of the airport. I was the only tourist that had landed in, clearly. But people definitely spoke some English, which was great. And I actually made a friend, and the girl that offered me socks then took me out for lunch the next day. She drove me around town, and very, very friendly, very welcoming people. So generally in the city, the level of English was good. But anywhere outside of that, no, the family that I stayed with for two nights, not a word of English. And there's no phone signal there either, so you're not Google translating. It's just communication, just as best as you can do, really. I most of the time had no idea what was going on. I did get lucky on the second night when another tourist turned up, and we were just as surprised to see each other. I was like, what are you doing here? She's like, what are you doing here? But she'd gone to the, she'd probably a bit more forward planning than me. And she'd actually hired a Mongolian guide to come with her for her trip. So that was quite nice that I got to kind of piggyback off the back of him translating everything for us. So I did then learn a bit more about the family I was staying with and the reindeers and why they're there and just their day-to-day life. So that was quite nice. But other than that, you definitely can go a day or two without speaking to anyone in English. For
wow,
sure.
What an adventure. So this, you got to the reindeer village. How long were you there? And did they just take you in? Did they just decide we're going to show you how we live and let you sit on a reindeer and ride one? I mean, did you eat some? I mean, I think that's probably a big staple of their diet too, I would assume.
So surprisingly, they do eat reindeer. It's not as common as you would think. Like they only have, for the family I was with, they did have quite a lot. They had about 30. But it's not like the biggest, most sustainable part of their diets. They do eat some reindeer if they're getting a little bit older. But generally, no, they actually have quite a strong bond with the reindeer. That part of Mongolia, they believe that they're a lot more, believe in shamanism. So they actually have quite a strong spiritual connection to not all the reindeer, I found out, but some of the reindeer. So yes, they will eat them from time to time, but not as part of their daily sort of diet. But yeah, I pretty much got adopted into the day-to-day life of the reindeer herders. So yeah, the first day when I got there, no one was speaking any English. So that's fine. So you just kind of do as they do, which is, it was just fascinating to be a fly on the wall and see them go about their daily life of, yeah, herding the reindeer, letting them go out to graze on the grass. I grew up riding horses, thankfully, which made riding reindeer quite a bit easier. Still not easy. I did actually fall off a reindeer, which I wasn't expecting to do, but they're not really built the same way as horses are. So the saddles that you sit on, they do slip quite a lot. So as we went on a reindeer hike one day, this is the second day when, the guide was there. He was like, oh, they want to go and visit the lady's brother. So as much as you stay with a family, they're actually all quite far apart. The closest other that I knew of, family was 2 hours away on the reindeer. So he said, we're going to go up and visit. I didn't quite get the reason why, but we trekked for 2 hours on reindeer back to go and visit her brother. And we got there and we looked in the teepee and they weren't there. So we turned around and we came back again. There's no way to communicate. There's barely any phone signal. We just came back. We lit a fire. We had a cup of tea in there. They're actually called, they have teepees, but then they have gurs, which is a yurt, which is the traditional place where they stay. We had a cup of tea and we came back again. That was it. There's nothing else you can do other than they're like, they're probably out there herding the reindeer. So if they're not in, they're not in. That's it. Game over.
God. I got to tell you, Mark, this sounds like I love adventure, but this sounds like a nightmare in my 50s here. Just sitting on that animal for 2 hours and then turn around and go back. I mean, I don't know. Yeah. Your ass must have been killing you. My back is hurting just hearing about it.
They're not the most comfortable animals to ride. I've ridden worse. I've ridden camels before. They're very uncomfortable to ride. Reindeer's not too bad trekking through, but it was incredibly cold to be sat on the back for a while. But thankfully, I was well prepared with thick socks and gloves.
You put some shoes on finally, did you? You finally put some shoes on
for that. Yeah, thank God. I switched out the flip flops. I thought that'd be a good idea.
I can't believe you showed up in Mongolia in almost the winter with flip flops on.
When everyone's just talking about you, I knew that was happening. Like the cabin crew on the airplane, I knew they were laughing at me. I was like, yeah, I know. I wasn't well prepared for this.
That's
a bit of a rush.
Yeah, that is the most Australian thing you've done. Is adopt the flip flop as daily wear. I understand it in Thailand, but in Mongolia, come on, put on a shoe for God's sake.
Absolutely, I do agree.
So, okay, well, that's an amazing trip. And so you say you have a blog, and while you were up there, is this more about your writing, or do you shoot video, or what kind of things are you doing? Do you have a YouTube channel?
No, not so much. So I do like to share some of my travels. It's something that I've recently started doing. I wouldn't say I'm a blogger. I've put a few things up on the site. But I've always kept journals of my travels. And actually 2 years ago, I actually wrote a book, something of a travel memoir that I published 2 years ago. So I found myself, as we all did, in COVID with a lot of time on our hands. And I won't go too into it, but I was living in LA at the time. I'd in COVID moved away from Thailand and moved out to Los Angeles to rekindle with an ex-girlfriend at the time.
Oh boy, here we go. What part of LA? What part of LA were you?
I was in Culver City. We had a place in Culver City for a while. And then I moved down to Santa Monica for a little bit. I got a job in Santa Monica, working in a bar down there for a couple of months.
Oh, which bar? I lived in Santa Monica. That's why, during COVID. So maybe I saw you there. Which bar were you at?
It was the King's Head.
Of course.
The British pub.
Of course. Yeah. Well, Santa Monica has an inordinate amount of Brits, expats everywhere. And there's like five British pubs. I used to, the Cock and Bull. I used to live near. Yeah. So I was in walking distance to that one.
So, okay, nice. Yeah, there's a few. We got the Brit, then you got Jameson's, which is a bit further down.
Yeah, that's where I was, like in off Main Street there. That's where I was. So I was in Ocean Park.
Yeah.
We were neighbors. Look at that. Apparently the girlfriend thing didn't work out.
It didn't work out.
Or maybe it did. So, is she with you?
No. That didn't go quite as planned. I mean, not through much of fault of our own. It was more, I went to America on a tourist visa. I can stay for a couple of months at a time, like 3 months. And then, I'd have to do a little visa run and come back and in and out. And I pushed my luck too far, basically. I think the third visa run coming back in, a few questions were asked and my time in America was over.
Got it.
We'll put it like that. So along with that, when bit of time and distance between you, because she stayed in America, she's American. That kind of put a bit of an end to that. And that's when I COVID was kind of pretty much over and done by that point. So I moved back to Thailand at that point.
Oh, great. Okay. So,
I wrote a book about it.
Okay. What's the name of the book and can people read it? Is it online somewhere?
Absolutely. You can. It's called One Way Ticket by Mark Phipps. It's on Amazon. It's the best way to get it there. I wrote it more as I just needed to get some things off my chest and I had a lot of time and I was like, you know what? Actually, because when I was sat at American Immigration and I was kind of explaining my story to the immigration officer and they just couldn't really comprehend. They were like, wait, so you lived in New Zealand, but then you lived in Australia, but then you lived in Thailand, and then where's your home? And I was like, well, I don't really have one. I just travel and I've bounced around for the last 12 years. And I think I was just blowing this woman's mind. She was like, but I don't understand. She's like, where's your house? I was like, I don't have one. And she's like, well, when you're denied entry to America now, where are you going to go? And I was like, I don't know. I guess that's up to you. They sent me to El Salvador because that's where I flew in from. But I was like, I don't really have a base to go back to. I am from England, but I haven't lived there in 12 years. And she was just like, look, you need to write a book. I don't understand your life. And I was like, cool, maybe I will. So it was off the back of the immigration officer's recommendation that I actually wrote a book and published it. It's out there. One Way Ticket. Give it a read.
Is there one address back in England you can just give in a pinch? Like, I don't know if your family's still there. Or so like, you know, this is my sister's house. And you just say it's your house, you know?
Yeah, I've got my mom's house. She's still there.
There you go.
But even with that, it was quite funny at the time. She's like, what's a UK address? I was like, well, it's this one. But I was like, funny enough, my mom moved recently. So I've never actually lived at that house. That's not the house I grew up in. But I do have an address that I use and bank accounts and stuff like all goes through the UK. But it's not somewhere that I'm back at, often. I will go back in a month. I'll go home for Christmas, my first Christmas home in a while. Probably in a good 12, 13 years, but I'm looking forward to that.
Nice. Mm. So what is it like? I know with the Commonwealth, it's easier for Brits to get, you know, work visas and things in Australia and New Zealand and Canada and everything like that. But Thailand, what is it like as someone who's starting a business there and trying to be an entrepreneur and you also work for somebody else, right? Do you work for a local Thai company or do you work for a foreign company in Thailand? How does that work?
It's a foreign company, but they do have a registered business in Thailand. So my visa is done through that. It's a business visa through the company that I work for, which makes life a hell of a lot easier for everybody involved there. So yeah, it's an Australian company, but we're registered in Thailand. So that gives me the non-B business visa. But it is possible. Things are becoming a lot more open for especially Thailand, maybe following the lead of like Bali and Indonesia. They're making life easier for digital nomads.
Yeah.
I wouldn't class myself per se as a digital nomad, but I know a lot of my friends are. And you can get these digital nomad visas. They're making life a lot easier. And I think Thailand and places like that are definitely seeing the benefits of it. So it's a lot more accessible than what it used to be.
And you just have to prove that you make a certain amount online every month, right?
Or that's something. It. Yeah, I think it's the DTV visa, the digital tourism visa. You just have to fill in the form and prove that you earn X amount. And they're sort of happy to have us in, which I think makes sense. It's a no-brainer for people to be making, making that Western money, bringing it in and spending it and giving it back to local businesses. It's amazing to see.
Yeah. And I've talked to a number of digital nomads who spent time in Thailand, but in the past, and most of them end up either in Bangkok or Chiang Mai, or maybe Koh Samui or, you know, Phuket or something like that. But you were down in Koh Phangan, right? I mean, how did you end up there and why? The only thing I know about Koh Phangan is the full moon party. Isn't that where that is?
Yeah, absolutely. That's kind of what it became famous for. Absolutely. Which still happens. It still gets very popular once a month. And it's a good time. It's only 15 minutes away from where I live, which is wild to have one of the biggest parties in the world just down the road from your house. But I'll still go down every now and then. The tour company that I work for, we take groups of travelers around Thailand, so naturally they want to go. So we still go for that. But yeah, it's a gorgeous, gorgeous island. Outside of full moon, it's actually quite quiet, quite peaceful. There's a great community of expats there. And that's kind of where we have our operational base. For the tour company that I work for, we own a hotel there, so that's mostly where I stay. They provide accommodation for me, and that's just kind of always been our base. So that's how we've ended up in Koh Phangan, which is a wonderful place to live.
Are most of your tours based around, say, beaches, or is this like more active kind of, you know, touring the whole country, or like hardcore river rafting or something like that? What kind of tours are you doing?
Yeah, we like to think we have a good mix. So, the company I work for is called Intro Travel. They are amazing. We're in 16 different destinations around the world now. I started off just being a group leader. So I'd run people around and help organize the trips for everyone. I work a little bit more in like the operational side of things. I'm 35 now, so don't run around doing too many tours. It's quite exhausting. We definitely started off as being a bit more like, beach orientated stuff, but we're massively diversifying now. Like our trip in Japan is a lot more cultural. We like to think we have a good mix of everything on the trips, from culture, adventure, history, nights out, a good range or the best of the destination, really. So we have a good mix of everything, and it's really good fun. So.
So you said you were in South Korea. Do you have is your company have people in South Korea? And are you in the States? I mean, are you here yet?
So South Korea, we were in South Korea for our annual kind of work get together. Lots of meetings involved, but lots of fun at the same time. But the reason we chose South Korea is because we are launching a tour there very soon. So that will be launching in, I think, March next year is the first trip we're running in South Korea. Yeah, we launched the Japan trip, and that took off really well when people were interested, and everyone was kind of chomping at the bit for us to do a tour in South Korea. So we're doing one there as well. And then, no, we're not in the States. That'll be a big, big beast to tackle. But yeah, we do have quite a big a Central America trip. So, yeah, we go through Mexico, down into Belize, to Guatemala, and then ends in Costa Rica as well. So they're all available as like individual trips, but you can link them all together into one big tour as well.
And this is called Intro Travel? Intro Travel?
Intro Travel, yeah. Okay. We've been around just over 20 years or so.
Okay, cool. So Thailand, it's been a while since I've been there. I don't know, maybe it's been 7-8 years, definitely pre-COVID. How are things doing? How's the economy? Are things better? I don't know how many years you've been there, but I mean, have you seen a change in for the better or worse? And what's the good and bad happening in Thailand right now?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I first went about 10 years ago, I think, is when I was living there sort of more full time. It's so backpacker friendly, the travel. I mean, I think it always has been, and the routes are kind of like ingrained in the places for people to go, and that's not changed too much, to be honest. There's still hot spots for people to go to. I'd still recommend anyone, like, it's such a beautiful gateway to Southeast Asia and a great place to start for anyone. It's definitely gotten a bit more modern for sure, like a bit more Western friendly, I suppose. You can go and get a great cup of coffee and a great pizza, and the style of hotels or hostels has definitely improved from what I remember it to be. I think just the style and how people like to travel has changed a bit through the years as well. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's not quite as sort of down and dirty and rough in it. You can definitely get some nice accommodation cheaply as well. But things have definitely got more expensive through the years as well. Like it's definitely not as cheap as what it used to be, which is fine. Like the world's changing and everyone's getting a little bit more expensive anyway, but it's definitely still an incredibly affordable place for anybody to come. Your money goes a very long way, and to be able to give back to the locals is amazing as well. Food's still great.
Food's fantastic.
Weather's still incredible.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't get enough of the food.
The food's so good.
As much as I love Japanese food, get me back to Thailand.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I hear you. So, yeah, I mean, Thailand, they will say, I mean, they've been on the tourist path for decades now. So their infrastructure for it, whether it's hotels or transportation and things, they pretty much got it down. But then you would go to someplace like, you know, Laos or Cambodia, and you're like, ooh. Mm-hmm. And people would say, oh, this is what Thailand used to look like. You know, they're still catching up. Do you explore much around those other, like, Laos and Cambodia and places like that?
Laos, I've not been to for a while. Cambodia, I was there last year, I think. Yeah, we have tours there. We run tours through Vietnam, Cambodia. Not in Laos. There's not too much of a demand for it there. But yeah, there's still probably a little bit behind Thailand in the main cities, your Phnom Penhs, Siem Reap. Like if you go over to Koh Rong, some of the islands in Cambodia as well, you can still expect some power outages at certain times of day as well. The power still goes out, but that's the charm of it, you know. Like you don't want to go somewhere with all the comforts of home. That's the fun of it for me. So yeah, Thailand's definitely still got that. It is comfortable enough so that you can live there and still get a little taste of home when you want it. But yeah, you don't want everything to be the same. Like even on Koh Phangan, which is a bit more modernized, like the power's still going to go out, the water's going to cut out from time to time. The Wi-Fi at 4:30 in the afternoon, I know, like clockwork is going to get awful. like that's just the way that it is. So it's definitely improving, but it's always comes with the troubles of Southeast Asia. It's still going to have that beautiful charm to it as well, with not having those comforts at home, which is what travel's all about for me anyway, is being a little bit tested with it.
Well, let's look back on your memoir and some travel tales there. Give me some of give me one story that really stands out. The one that you always tell. You have to tell because everybody's like, Mark, tell that story about that time you got arrested wherever this, or that time you got sick, or that time you fell off a donkey in wherever. I mean, give me one of those.
I mean, it usually starts with the getting kicked out of America story, okay. Which I know we've kind of spoken about already, but that's normally, that's normally where it kind of starts from, and kind of where it starts and ends. That were kind of like did prompt the book there as well. But, we had a pretty rough encounter with a rhino when we were traveling across, Namibia, which was,
I haven't been in Namibia. I've heard good things. There in Botswana are on my list. I'd really like to see.
Yeah, so that was something that I knew I wanted to do, and was kind of like a big trip that I'd wanted to do for quite a while. And that was drive from Namibia across Botswana and get to Zimbabwe, go to Victoria Falls. And I love a road trip. And usually I do travel by myself, like Mongolia went completely by myself. But this time I'd kind of put the idea out to a few friends. And in the end, there were six of us that went. We hired a couple of cars with rooftop tents on top. And we drove from Windhoek in Namibia all the way across Botswana, did the Okavango Delta, went to Victoria Falls and turned around and came back. During that journey, towards the end, I think it was actually the last day that we were due to give our cars back. And a friend of mine is actually he's a safari guide in South Africa. I met him when I went and did a trip there, and he came along just for fun. But this was the one morning where he decided to he decided to sleep in. He didn't come with us to, we went to a private game reserve to actually look at some accommodation potentially for a trip we were going to set up. It was like, cool, all good. We were there the night before for drinks, so he kind of just left us to it. So we went, looked at the accommodation, all good. And as we were driving out of the private game reserve, there was about four or five rhinos like on the path in front of us. And we're all a little bit, yeah, feeling a bit ropey, all giggly because we're a little bit hungover and just feeling rough. We want to get out. I'm like, well, what do? We stopped so far back from these rhinos knowing that we, you know, we should just stay away and wait and be patient. But they took a really active interest in us. And then from the side, one just kept getting closer. And we were just like children. We're like, of course, the one time our friend who's a guide isn't here, where we get a rhino like really becoming quite curious, and the closer he got, the more giggly we got, and we were just like, what are we doing? It was like nervous energy. And all I could remember from the day before is being told, because these rhinos, we did see them yesterday, is how sensitive their hearing is. And I'm like, we have to stop giggling because like we are not supposed to be making noise. And it, literally to the point where the rhino was brushing his nose up on the side of the car, of this van. And we were like, we don't know what to do. And we were torn between either gun it and just get us out of here. And I'm like, that's not a good idea, because anytime we kind of started inching forward, you know, he'd sort of turn around. So we just had to sit and wait. And it was probably the longest 15 minutes of my life, trying to figure out what to do between genuine, like, well, if this rhino decides to sort of like ram the car, then there's nothing we can do. And because it's, because they're private, it's in a private game reserve. They're not dehorned. They've still got the big horn on front of them. Like this thing is going to go through the vehicle 100%. And you just don't know. Like I don't know the temperament of a rhinoceros. So it was very touch and go for about 15 minutes, and eventually he lost interest, and we just sort of turned around and went straight back to the main gate to the main restaurant. And we were like, we just had a crazy encounter with one of your rhinos. Like, we still need to leave. What do we do? And they thought it was hilarious. They're like, oh yeah, don't worry, that happens from time to time. So nonchalant. So I just had this, what we considered to be like a near death experience. And they were super chill that, so they were like, I'll just go another way and just drive out. But yeah, to be face to face, like really, like with just a car door between you and a rhino is quite an experience. So that's always something that's just like, what?
Wow. Well, I mean, you do a lot of active stuff. Have you ever been injured? Ever had to go to a hospital in a dodgy area and anything like that?
Touch wood, no. I've been to a few dodgy dentists in my time somehow. Like for some reason,
but that was in England, you know. As a standard joke. I'm sorry, I couldn't.
No, that's bad.
That's a hacky joke. You set me up on that one.
But no, thankfully, touch wood, I've avoided all kind of like major, any major things from happening along my time. I've been lucky, very lucky with that, to be honest. No injuries. Not with anyone really that I've traveled with. Occasional, person falling off a scooter here or there, but hey, that's Southeast Asia for you. It really does happen every day. But other than that, no, I've been quite lucky with that. I think the only time I went to a hospital was from a very, very small scratch on my leg that I got through doing my farm work in Australia. And I went into the swimming pool at the backpackers hotel, which then got incredibly infected. So I do remember going to hospital for that. And I actually have a small scar on my leg from how infected it got. And apparently the backpackers I was staying at was notorious for having a questionably disgusting pool. So I should have known better there. That's the only thing that comes to mind.
I don't want to know what's floating in a hostile pool.
I don't want to know either. No, I really don't.
It's like the pool at the Playboy Mansion or something.
Yeah, I would imagine so. Just nowhere near as glamorous.
So what's next for you? I mean, where do you want to go? What's on your bucket list?
So what I try and do, I wasn't planning on going back to Europe this year, but I found incredibly cheap flights. I did book a flight, what was supposed to be a flight from Bangkok to London, but with Norse Airways, but they did the same flight was Bangkok to Stockholm. So I was like, Europe's small. So I'm going to go to Sweden for a couple of days in December. From there, I'm going to go to Poland for a few days, and then that's me done for the year. I'm in Japan just for another week or so, and then I'll be in Bangkok for about a week and then fly back to Europe. So they're just like little mini Euro breaks that I like to do when I go home. And actually, nothing major planned next year. I do tend to book for things on the fly and just kind of figure things out very last minute. I'm a nightmare for anyone to try and plan things with because I do things very last minute. And as I said, I do generally like to get into sticky situations by myself, but I do think there'll be another Africa trip on the cards. I'm probably looking at a Kenya and a Tanzania combo, maybe with a trip back to Uganda. I did go a few years ago to see the gorillas and just loved it. So it's not often I'll do something twice, but I do think I'll go back and do that again. And I just had such a good time. I actually want to take some friends with me just so they can experience it. And I'd love to just go back to Uganda. I had such a good trip there. But definitely a Kenya, Tanzania will be on the cards potentially for next year.
Yeah, I love all that. I did the Ugandan, the gorilla trekking in 2019.
Amazing.
Yeah, it was incredible. Yeah, really, yeah. Really good. Not cheap. I mean, it was cheaper in Uganda than it was in Rwanda, I tell people. I mean, I think the permits were about half in Uganda than they were in Rwanda, but it was still incredible.
Yeah, I paid $800.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people, even people that I met on my trek that I did, they'd come up from Rwanda just because it was like half the price. I think like it was the permits like $800 in Uganda and like $15 in Rwanda. So yeah, worth making the hop over the border and getting another country ticked off.
Oh yeah, totally. You have a business to run, so you can't be off too long. I mean, you got two businesses happening at the same time.
That's it. Yeah, got a job to lock down, and a lot of things on the cards at the moment. So yeah, that'll be the focus next year is driving that. Possibly do some a combination between the two, like a kind of like a Lost in Paradise and Intro combination trip. I often do get people message saying next time you're doing a crazy trip, let me know. I want to come with you. So. I'm not against, like I said, I do get a lot of joy from showing people around countries and destinations and taking people on my wild adventures. But you have to be prepared for some uncomfortable bus rides and questionable accommodation.
Yeah.
But that's what I like to do, man. So, yeah, let's see.
Questionable reindeer rides.
Exactly. many side quests is generally the message again. What side quest are you going on next? So let's see, something crazy, I'm sure.
No, that's amazing. But you've carved out a pretty fun life. I mean, pretty interesting life. Is there a long-term goal of like a place you could, do you see yourself living permanently in one place, or do you think you'll always kind of be nomadic?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I am quite settled in Thailand, and I do like living on Koh Phangan. It's a great place to live. I'm big into my Muay Thai, like Thai kickboxing, so I'm able to do that. It's busy enough and big enough that I don't, there's plenty of restaurants to choose from, not too small of an island where you kind of get a bit of cabin fever. And I think Thailand will definitely be home for now. And no plans on sort of moving anywhere else. I do tend to get quite itchy feet. And there is a few places I still want to explore. I'd love to spend some time in sort of Central South America and maybe let's spend a couple of months living there if I could. So let's see. I mean, I love my day job right now, but let's see if, Lost in Paradise Travel hopefully takes off and I'll be a little bit more nomadic and I'll be able to grow that from the road would be a dream as well. At the moment, just sort of taking every day as it comes.
And Central America, very flip flip-flop friendly. So you'll be in good shape there.
Absolutely. Yeah. Anywhere I can walk around in flip-flops or barefoot would be even better. So
I tell you, when I see people on the plane in flip-flops, my first thought, two things I have against it. And we'll wrap this up in a second. But here's the only thing. I don't have this revulsion to bare feet that I have friends who do. They see bare feet and they're disgusted. That's one. Right. I don't have that hang up. But also, my feet always get cold on planes. That's number one. I don't know, maybe it's a circulation thing, but my feet are always cold on airplanes. That's one. But two, flip-flops take up no space in your bag. It's like I always try to wear my biggest, clunkiest shoes on the plane so I don't have to pack them. You know what I mean? And it saves bag room. So explain yourself. In court, you're the lawyer to defend flip-flops on the plane.
Yeah, I don't really have a great case to make against that other than I just am comfortable in flip-flops. I do agree. I know it's kind of a taboo thing to do is barefoot on a plane. I know people are against it, but hey, I feel like my feet are usually, actually people would disagree that they're clean, especially walking around Bangkok in flip-flops. Yeah, maybe that is just a terrible trait that I have. And I do agree. They take up no room in your backpack. So it does depend where I'm going. I have learned my lesson. If I'm flying to a cold country, wear warm shoes on the plane because you will not need flip-flops when you land.
No.
And people will look at you weird. So
and they could lose your bag. And then you'd really be screwed.
Then I would have been in so much trouble.
Oh, yeah,
actually,
absolutely.
Could you imagine?
Oh, no. Just begging for socks and shoes.
Then I would have taken that lovely lady up on giving me some socks. She took pity on me.
Absolutely.
I fully get that. You make a lot of sense, Mike.
Okay, well, give me it's lostinparadisetravel.com.
Absolutely.
And people can order their covers.
On Instagram. You can find us on Instagram. Follow the travels there. I generally post some crazy trips that I've done or stories from other people as well. So, you can find us on Instagram, TikTok, the website, lostinparadisetravel.com.
Perfect. Finally, what do you think all this travel and the places you've been around the world, what has it taught you about people? What has it taught you about yourself and the world? How has it changed you?
Oh man, like I know we were going to wrap it up. We could be there for a long time. It's become such a huge part of everything I do and who I am. It's definitely taught me that how similar people are, like listening to the stories from around the world that are similar, from religions to the way that people live. Everyone's kind of doing a very similar thing, but just maybe in a very slightly different way. We're all very much one and the same at the end of the day, which is great. I love going around and learning about different cultures, meeting new people, and just listening to other people's stories. I think everyone's got a great story to tell. And that's a wonderful way to go and do it. It puts life in perspective. If you go and travel and see different cultures and the way that people live and how happy people can be with much less. I think that's an important lesson to learn and learn about each other as we go around and travel the world.
That's great. And you realize we all put our flip-flops on 1 foot at a time.
That's it, right? Man. Absolutely.
There you go.
If at all. Yeah.
Mark Phipps, thank you so much for doing this. Hang on the line and I'll talk to you afterwards. But good luck with the business. And it's great to meet you. Hopefully I'll get out there soon and then we can share a beer together.
Absolutely. Anytime, my friend.
A Sing Ha. I don't care. Either one. You know, I'll a Tiger. I'll drink even
anything but a Chang and we're good to go.
Yeah, we'll class it up with a Sing Ha or something. There you go.
Absolutely.
All right. Mark Phipps, everybody. Thanks.
Thank God.
If you love travel, you'll love Winging It Travel Podcast. Every Monday, I share stories from 75 countries, from backpacking tips, epic adventures, and plenty of travel inspiration. Alongside that, I host guest interviews every 2 weeks. Check it out at voicegate.com.
Travel isn't just about where you go, it's how you do it. Curious Tourism explores the impact of travel with Aaron Hines and Katie Lahr. Check it out at voyescape.com.